Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
They've now brought us other work from different departments because I lived up to my word. That was just the right thing to do.
Today on episode 420 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with Ben Walker, the founder and CEO of Transcription Outsourcing. I'm going to ask Ben how he ended up owning a transcription company, how to find what feeds your soul and your wallet at the same time, how he has developed consistent, stable revenue, and much more. You can read a description of our discussion, information about Ben, including links and resources we mentioned in this episode, on our website at smashingtheplateau.com. We've produced over 400 episodes of Plateau Smashing Discussions with top business leaders. Let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's David at smashingtheplateau.com. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Now let's welcome Ben Walker. Ben is a CEO, entrepreneur, and visionary leader that enjoys helping others become successful in business. Ben's company, Transcription Outsourcing, provides user-friendly and cost-effective transcription services for the medical, legal, law enforcement, and financial industries for organizations all over the world. Ben is a sought-after thought leader and has made contributions to publications like Entrepreneur Magazine, the Associated Press, Inc., and Forbes. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, David.
So, Ben, did you have a dream that one day you would own a transcription company?
No. That was just kind of a matter of happenstance, being at the right place at the right time, I guess.
Yeah. So how did you end up being the owner of a transcription company? What's the story behind that?
It's pretty unique. I happened to be at dinner with my parents about 12 years ago, and they started talking about a friend of theirs that was starting a medical transcription company. And at that time, I was trying to get into the healthcare field any way I could. I was having trouble getting a job because I didn't have any experience. And I was trying to get medical device sales jobs or pharmaceutical rep jobs. And I couldn't get any. No one would hire me because I didn't have any experience. And when they started talking about their friend that was starting this medical transcription company, I immediately said, I want to meet him and I want to do it. And they said, what are you talking about? We're just talking about this other guy who's starting a company. And I said, I don't care. I want in healthcare. So I fell into it by, you know, being at dinner with my parents.
Yeah, unexpected opportunities are often what leads to phenomenal results. So I'm guessing you got the job.
I got the job and they let me buy a small part of the company. And as we started going the first 2 to 3 years, I noticed a trend that we were losing clients due to changes in technology in the medical industry. So I started researching other kinds of transcription and then broke off from them and started my current company, Transcription Outsourcing.
So when you started Transcription Outsourcing, was it a competitor to the company you were working for?
Yes and no. The other company is based in Omaha, Nebraska, and we're in Denver. I told them I wouldn't go after any clients in Nebraska, and they said the same thing about Colorado. They weren't interested in doing that. And I still own part of that company, so no, I don't compete directly with them.
Mm. And what was it like to actually start your own company after working for somebody else? How did it feel at first?
I didn't know anything. I literally didn't know anything. It was scary.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where to start. Like filing the right documents with the state took me 2 tries to set up the LLC correctly. I didn't do the correct setup at the bank. So I had to close the bank accounts and redo that. The IRS gave me trouble over getting my tax identification number because, again, I wasn't too positive how to do all of this, but I eventually figured it out and got it all set up. Then breaking off from them and keeping the clients that I had gained in Colorado, that took some doing because people were like, wait a second, why are you switching the name and why aren't you with them anymore? It worked out.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy, but it worked out.
And how long ago did you actually launch transcription outsourcing?
8 years ago. We just started our ninth year, June 24th.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And fast forward to today, what is transcription outsourcing like?
We do a lot of legal and law enforcement transcription now. We have quite a few clients in those two areas and not as many medical, like not nearly as many medical. I don't go to medical conferences anymore. I'm not on medical society boards anymore. Because of the changes in the healthcare industry, just the ROI wasn't there to participate in those things anymore.
So what was it about the medical industry that so intrigued you 12 years ago?
I liked how educated everyone was, how well-spoken, they dressed nice. It wasn't, I didn't feel like used car salesman type. You know, I was in the real estate industry before that, and it wasn't for me. I wanted something that was relationship building instead of transactional.
Mm. So the shift to the industry sectors that you now serve sound like they weren't, they're not a shift from sort of the environment you wanted to be in.
They certainly are a major shift. It was a matter of survival though. I don't have a resume and I don't get along well with people who boss me around. So when I found the legal and law enforcement transcription opportunities, kind of, you know, we just made a slight turn to keep the doors open. Yeah, it was more a matter of survival than me wanting to stay in healthcare.
Yep, got it. And what advice would you have for others that may be following a similar kind of path, trying to figure out how they can not be told what to do by somebody else and find the right spot that feeds their soul and feeds their financial needs at the same time?
It's not necessarily something I, you know, like you asked originally, dreamt about doing, but it's that I stuck with it and I didn't give up. You can do good at any job if you're willing to figure it out. I've had employees that I would take with me anywhere. If I were to close this down and go open a gas station, I would bring them with me because they can figure it out. They're not just going to say, oh, I've never worked at a gas station, I'm not doing that. They can figure it out. Like you force yourself to figure it out. It's, like I said, a matter of survival. So you figure it out. Your back's against the wall. Are you just going to cave and let it go and go collect unemployment or something? I don't know.
Yep. No, it makes sense. So whom do you serve now? To talk a little bit about who your ideal customers are and what kind of solutions you provide for them.
We serve the legal community, the law enforcement community, academia. We still have medical clients, just not as many as before. Some financial clients, some call center clients. So we transcribe their audio into text. And the ideal client is someone who wants and needs 99% accurate transcripts. We don't use overseas people. We use US-based transcriptionists because they speak the language as their native tongue. They get it right. They understand context. They know where to put punctuation. So our clients are different than some of our competitors' clients that maybe don't need 99% plus accuracy. And that's a law enforcement agency because those transcripts have to be perfect. They can't submit it to a judge or the DA for prosecution with mistakes in it. It's just not good. And the legal industry is the same. When they need depositions or court hearings transcribed, it's got to be perfect. And you do that by using US-based people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I was going to say, in the academic world, they do tons and tons and tons of research. But in order to get the best data out of it, you have to have perfect transcripts. So again, they pay us a little bit more than they would one of my competitors because they're going to get the correct data out of it.
And how do your customers typically find you?
We use a couple different ways. One is search engine optimization or SEO. And the other main driver of new business for us has been RFPs, requests for proposals.
Interesting.
We evaluate those go quite a bit. I've got one on my desk right now for the Wichita Police Department that has a conference call next Tuesday, I believe, to go over all the parameters and what they require. And then we'll decide then if we should submit an answer to their proposal request.
Mm. So is it common for prospects in your space to submit RFPs?
It is if they're a large agency that's going to spend more than $25,000 a year. That's kind of the number. It's not the same in every state, but that's a good number, is if they're going to spend $25,000 or more a year, they're forced by state law or statute to do an RFP to make sure it's fairly bid and they don't, you know, give the business to their cousin or something.
Right, right. Ben, one of the big struggles that many small business owners face, particularly really small ones that are you know, single person business, is being able to generate consistent, stable revenue. What have your experiences been trying to create some consistency with your revenue model?
It was hard in the beginning because I did start out on my own at home. And back, that would be 10 and a half years ago now, I started going to medical conferences to meet people to create, you know, friendships or network with people who ran medical practices and surgery centers. And I literally asked, you know, you use this every day, right? Your docs need this every day all year. And they said, yes. They said, no, I still work with them, but I kind of targeted the ones who needed it every day and would continue to follow up with them. Then the RFP process, those types of entities, they lay it out in the RFP. We use this much every week, every month, every year. This is the anticipated allotment of money. This is what we did the previous 2 years or 5 years. Then you can see, oh, well, these guys aren't going to use us very much, so maybe I shouldn't spend 40 hours putting together my proposal. So it's don't pass up any opportunity, but then evaluate it properly. And if it's not going to give you the recurring revenue, you probably should pass on it.
Yeah. How hard was it, especially early on, when income may not have been what it is now? How hard was it to tell yourself that you really needed to pass up what might have seemed like income opportunities?
I can't tell you how hard that is, because I've had to fire some clients in the past. They just weren't the right fit for us. And then you look at it and you think they spend $2,500 a month, which in the beginning, that was a lot of money. I mean, you're talking $30,000 a year. And that pays for an employee. It just didn't fit. We dreaded when they called, we'd see their name come up on the caller ID and no one would want to answer the phone. Because it was kind of toxic relationship. They spoke really loudly to us and said some insulting things. And then after, you know, 6 months of that, it's like, man, I don't know if I can take this anymore. So then we politely said, you know, we think it'd be best if you found someone else to do your transcription for you. And we gave them some time and they figured it out. 3 months later, they were done.
And what was the result for your business after you severed those relationships?
The stress in the office was immediately relieved by half, knowing that they weren't going to be calling and kind of speaking down to us. And treating us poorly, it helped a lot. Morale went up. I mean, immediately. Once we knew their last day was, you know, this Thursday, Friday was better.
Even though the income was less.
Yeah, because I just decided to figure it out because it was my decision as the business owner. I was determined to replace them as quickly as possible. And things fall into place when you force yourself to do things like that.
Yeah, going back to different kinds of revenue opportunities, what are some of the thoughts that have gone through your head when you're looking at revenue opportunities that have pointed you in the direction of recurring revenue as opposed to transactional revenue?
Well, first of all, I like creating relationships, even if it is through the RFP process, because you don't win them all. But when you do get awarded a new contract and you start working with, let's say, the Washington State Patrol. We work with them almost on a daily basis, but usually, you know, a couple times a week at least. We've created relationships with the people in the specific department we work with. And once you do that, then they tell, you know, the guys down the hall or the guys upstairs or the ladies on another floor. And then they call us and say, we want to piggyback onto that contract. And it just kind of goes from there. Even though we had to be awarded a contract that 20 companies went for, you can then build it from there within that department. And then people leave that department and go to another state agency and bring you with them. So it's not the end of the road. Once you win one RFP, you can turn that into more business.
Mm. So what do you think are some of the keys to building successful relationships, particularly with organizations that might be either sizable or fairly bureaucratic?
Yeah, living up to your word. I didn't know this was going to happen. This is actually one of the most embarrassing things that's happened to me was, in particular, the Washington State Patrol. We missed some deadlines. One summer, I want to say it was two summers ago, a couple of our independent contractors that work, you know, for us from home, it was strange coincidence that within the same week, there was a tornado in one town, and then there was this terrible crime in a small town in rural Illinois where one of them worked, and she worked part-time at the sheriff's office. So she put in 80 hours that week and couldn't do our work. So long story short is I gave the Washington State Patrol $10,000 with free work. And I went up there 2 months later and sat down in a conference room with the captain and lieutenant that was in charge of this particular project that we were working on. And they thanked me for showing up in person and for shaking their hands and taking it and then giving us the $10,000 worth of free work. They've now brought us other work from different departments because I lived up to my word. That was just the right thing to do. So I did it. And then they appreciated it. They also said none of our vendors ever come meet us. They all just take our money and we might hear from them via email. Whereas I go up there once a year, shake their hands, ask how they're doing. You know, I show up in person and I don't have to do that. I do it because I think it's a good idea. And I do it with clients in Arkansas and Florida and all over Colorado. And that's what's helped is they shake my hand and get to meet me in person.
Yeah, it's a great story. What do you find to be maybe different in business now from when you first started or particularly challenging?
I used to do a lot of conferences where you set up a booth, give away, you know, all the swag and magnets and squishy ball things. Those don't work. They don't work for me. The return on an investment for conferences is almost gone. I can't tell you how many conferences I went to and never got a client. And I kept going back, like hoping that it would change. And it didn't. For, you know, 2 years later, I'm like, God, I spent $30,000 on conferences last year and didn't get one new client. So that was really challenging, trying to figure out how do I replace the conferences? Because we used to get two or three clients every conference in the beginning. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. It was easy. And then it started getting harder and harder, and then it disappeared. So figuring out how to replace the conferences, that was a challenge.
Mm, and what have you replaced them with?
Search engine optimization. We put most of the efforts into that we're going into conferences. People are finding us online like they used to find you at a conference.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. The internet has become much more robust and much more integrated with how everybody does business.
Oh, for sure. I once got a call from a sheriff's office in Louisiana, and I said, oh, Betsy, thanks for calling. I met Sheriff Johnson at the National Sheriff's Association 6 weeks ago. And she said, oh, really? I said, he didn't give you my business card? And she said, no, I just found you on Google. And I was like, oh, man.
I guess that was a lesson.
Yeah, that was kind of the last straw. It's like, I am not doing those conferences anymore then. And I don't blame the sheriff. He just, you know, they're hit with things all the time. And it gets overwhelming. And yeah.
Well, the data don't lie.
It doesn't. You're right.
Ben, whom do you know personally who has done a remarkable job at Smashing Plateaus?
I know a friend of mine I actually grew up with that started a company in Denver called Choozle. His name's Andrew Fisher. He's the co-founder and CEO of Choozle, and they have done a phenomenal job since they started 6 or 7 years ago. They kind of did what I did, and they diversified into some other categories and have blown it out of the water since they made their change.
And what's their core market? What do they sell?
They do the advertising that shows up on the right of your screen and on the banners.
Mm.
So it's a real-time bidding process. So you put in the most you'll pay, the least you'll pay, and then they run them for you in front of the right demographics.
Sounds great. What can we look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
We are giving away a free trial right now for new clients, recurring clients.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that would be something I should have mentioned in the recurring revenue model. We give a free trial out to those who could be recurring clients. Unfortunately, we don't give free trials out to the guy that just needs a 5-hour podcast transcribed, because if they're not going to come back, then we just can't be giving away money, unfortunately. Yeah, that's kind of what we're pushing right now, and a pseudo government contract that we were awarded about a year ago through NASPO, National Association of State Procurement Officers. We're pushing that out to state agencies and political subdivisions right now.
And how can listeners learn more about you and follow you, get in touch with you?
For transcription services, they can go to our website, www.transcriptionoutsourcing.net. On Twitter, they can follow me at Benjamin K. Walker. And if they look in LinkedIn and type in Ben Walker, I should pull up as the first one, because I'm really active on LinkedIn. And I do respond to messages personally on LinkedIn. Yeah, that's how they can find me or us.
That sounds great. Well, we will include these all in the show notes. And Ben, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and sharing your experiences and your insights with us.
Thank you for having me, David.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed how Ben ended up owning a transcription company, how to find what feeds your soul and your wallet at the same time, and how Ben has developed consistent, stable revenue. We've produced over 400 episodes of Plateau Smashing Discussions with top business leaders. Let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.